We're told that disposition of heart is much more important than the letter of the law. The wonderful story in the Gospels about the widow's mite. The poor woman who comes to church and offers much of her little, as opposed to the person who gives much, but out of his vast fortune. He feels very satisfied and happy with himself. Jesus took a somewhat different view. Now, the story of the widow's mite illustrates two themes in the points that I have just been making over the last few minutes. First of all, it's a wonderful parable. It's a story where the bare facts of the story, of course, conceal and then reveal another meaning entirely. In the second place, it's an example of the way Jesus sort of upset, overturned, controverted the customary teachings of his day. Now, Jesus didn't only teach in parables. We think, for example, of his famous Sermon on the Mount, when he gives his great speech, blessed are the weak, meek, blessed are the poor, blessed are they who hunger and thirst. Or when his disciples, for example, asked him to teach them how to pray, and he taught them, Our Father who art in heaven, and so on. But parables were his customary mode of making points, and he told lots of them, strewn variously through these Gospels that I've been mentioning. Again, an interesting example of the synoptic problem is that we'd have some of the same parables appear in more than one Gospel, some appear in only one Gospel. We have other ones that sort of upset conventional thinking. For instance, the story of the prodigal son, one of the most familiar of all the parables. A man has two sons. The younger asks him, well, let's now divide up our inheritance. Give us what we are due upon your eventual decease. The father agrees. He gives his younger son his half of the inheritance. The son goes off to a far land, dissipates everything he's been given. His father knows about this. His other son stays home, is dutiful, is diligent, works hard, you know, sort of the model upstanding citizen and all of that. But always the father grieves for the younger son. And finally, the younger son, the prodigal son, comes home. And much to the distress of his brother, the father receives him with great joy, gives him wonderful clothes, puts a ring on his finger, and treats him with great compassion, great forgiveness, great understanding. Now, that's not unlike, for instance, the story of the wealthy person who wants to give a great banquet, a great luncheon or a great dinner, and invites all of the elegant citizens of the nearby area to come. And as the time for the meal draws near, he discovers that none of these people are showing up. So he goes out and he meets one and then another and then another. And they're all making excuses. Well, I have business to do. I have to go look after my fields. I have to look after my responsibilities. So eventually the guy decides to go down to a crossroads and basically round up a bunch of street people and bring them in to his banquet and treat them then to the wonderful food and drink and hospitality that had been prepared for others. So again, the idea that those who may have great wealth, great power, great position in this society who expect much may not in fact be the ones who in the long run get much. We think of other stories, for example, the man who needs workers to help him in his field. So some people show up early in the morning, he puts them to work. People show up at midday, he puts them to work. People show up in the middle of the afternoon, he puts them to work as well. And at the end of the day, he pays them all the same. Now, this would strike us then, as indeed it struck them in the story, as not fair. But, of course, the idea is that the reward is the same for all. You see, the reward is the same for all. And every worker is worth his wage. The story of the man with the talents, the harsh master who leaves and trusts one slave with five talents, one with two and one with one. The slave who is entrusted with five talents invests it wisely, makes more, makes five more. The slave with two invests wisely, prudently, makes two more. The other slave, scared to death, he buries it in the ground. Well, the master comes home and each slave comes in turn and reports on what he has done to the first two. He says, oh, that's wonderful, that's very good, I'm so very pleased. To the last one, he says, well, you miserable, worthless, good-for-nothing person, you've just wasted your time, you've wasted my money, you could at least have given it to the bankers and made a little bit of interest, you see? So the idea also here is that one cannot just rest on one's laurels. One must act. One must do what is right. So disposition of heart, as with the widow, as with the prodigal son's father, as with the man giving a banquet, disposition of heart matters, but it also matters to do what is right. Well, despite his remarkable teachings, despite what we know of his long-term success, we must remember that in this world of paradox, Jesus was executed as a common criminal. And he doesn't appear to have had many followers at his death and not many people to stand up to him. In our next lecture, we'll turn to the question of how a movement was built on Jesus and his teaching that proved successful, indeed remarkably successful, over the next 2,000 years, even if, paradoxically, we would not predict that success in light of the experiences of the early decades of the first century.